Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A couple things before we get on to our hour. I can't quite let last hour go yet. And we're going to post on our Facebook page. We wanted to let you know about a Badger Honor Flight taking World War II vets from Wisconsin. This one is going from Madison, I believe. And so we're going to post all of that information on our Facebook page. I was in Washington a couple weeks ago and met a couple vets at the memorial. And I can't stop crying every time I talk about this. It just brings up a lot, doesn't it? Our parents and that war and evil and whew. So we'll post that. Did I give you the name of it? It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We will post that information on our Facebook page. The other thing I wanted to say is if you didn't already know it, it is primary day. And we will be doing election coverage tonight at 8 o'clock. Our coverage will start. So if you're looking for a place for interesting, we have reporters all over the state of Wisconsin. It's superb coverage, and it's here at 8 o'clock tonight. And then tomorrow morning we'll be, believe me, talking about the results of today. Many hours we'll be talking about that. Okay, I think that's all I have to say right now. No, it's not true. I have a lot more to say because we're moving into a new hour. Our guest this hour is a filmmaker who has done a very interesting documentary on, well, it's titled Misrepresentation, and it's about the media primarily and how media misrepresents women. Now, I grew up in an age where I thought we had this all settled. You know, we had a women's movement and women could do everything they wanted. We changed our perceptions. And then I saw this film and I thought, oh my gosh, I guess things are still bad in some areas. The sexualization of women and what people have to say about women in power and women on the news. It's a very interesting documentary, and it's about the media's misrepresentations of women and the underrepresentation of women in positions of power and influence in this country. Our guest is Jennifer Siebel Newsom, and she is a filmmaker, a speaker, an actress, and an advocate for women, girls, and their family. She wrote and directed and produced the 2011 Sundance documentary Misrepresentation, and she also has launched misrepresentation.org, which is a call to action campaign giving women and girls the tools to realize their full potential. She is an actress, as I said, and she's on the board of KQED. She's a member of the Girl Scouts Healthy Media Commission for Positive Images of Women and Girls, and she is an honorary board member of the International Museum of Women. She's a mom. And I could say a lot more about her, but we got to talk. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our phone number for Jennifer is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And the Facebook page, if you want to leave comments, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Jennifer. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here.
You know, I must say that I just kind of tune out a lot of junk on television, but I know I have a son who's almost 20, and I know that the world he lives in and the world that I live in are very, very different, starting with the number of hours that young people spend watching television and doing texting and all. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And then when I watched your documentary, I thought, holy Toledo, I've been missing a lot of this. I thought everything had changed, and indeed it hasn't. The pictures of the women were just atrocious.
Exactly. It's, you know, so American teens consume about 10 hours and 45 minutes of media a day. Can you believe that?
No.
So it's whether, you know, they're doing their homework, there's still media going on in the background, and it's seeping into their subconscious, and it's sending them really unhealthy messages about what it is to be a girl or a woman and what it is to be a boy or a man. And that's really what we tackle in misrepresentation. And, you know, it's really high time that we, as not only parents but educators and thought leaders and you know, the government leaders and business leaders, that we recognize that the media is sending such damaging messages that ultimately are damaging our culture. And it's not a, you know, I like to say, I mean, just there's so many recent examples, and we can get into that a little bit later, but It's interesting to me. I thought when the film premiered on Oprah Winfrey Network that things would die down. We premiered in October of 2011. And here it is, the spring of 2012, and things have only just picked up because there's been so much recently that has enabled people or encouraged people to have this conversation. The media really is sort of a starting point for people to have the conversation.
Yeah. Well, the images that you, and I guess they must be fairly representative. You did a documentary on this of what we see, the images of women. There's a certain kind of body form. There's low-cut necklines. There's wearing very little. Sometimes women fighting with each other, which is supposed to be sexy in some way. There's a sexuality to all of these women, and that's it. It doesn't go much beyond that. That's it. They're not in positions of power. They're not strong. They're not intelligent. Their minds aren't being applauded. It's what they look like.
Right, right. And that's the connection. So if the media continues to misrepresent us, if the media sexualizes up, if the media tells us that our only value really lies in our youth, our beauty, and our sexuality, then, you know, what does it mean to be a woman? What about our capacity to lead? What about our talents? What about our intelligence? And that's so damaging, because not only do young girls buy into that, but young boys buy into that, and men buy into that. And, you know, we're really doing a disservice to our country when we keep perpetuating and advertising in other forms of media, news media and mainstream media, when we promote this, you know, notion that sexuality sells and that by making women feel insecure and bad about themselves, they'll buy this and that product. We've got to be more creative and think outside of the box. And these are all the things that we're doing at misrepresentation.org, which is our social action campaign and arm that we created post the film, because I knew that I couldn't just set out to make a film. I had to spark a movement for change, because otherwise things weren't going to change.
So, Jennifer, is it all about money? Is it that sexuality sells?
It's about money, but it's that, you know, we're all kind of operating in this in our subconscious and not really thinking about our power as consumers and our power as citizens. Women are 86% of consumers. We make 86% of household consumption decisions. And we're just consuming that which is in front of us without really going, wait, is this good for me? Is this good for my kids? Is this good for my family? And so what we're doing through misrepresentation.org is reminding people of their power as consumers and reminding them that they can use their voice, not only their dollar and not consume things, but they can use their voice and speak out. We're citizens in this country. We don't have to buy that. We can say that that's wrong. We've, through our campaign, the stories that I'm told, they're incredible. We've had people go after GoDaddy and Teleflora.com during the Super Bowl commercials.
Mm.
We had launched a Not Buying It campaign, and mm-hmm. we had heterosexual men who love football, some married, some not, who literally spoke out and said and tweeted and wrote letters and said, you know, your ads disgust me. You know, and here I am, a heterosexual man who loves football, or husbands saying, you know, don't degrade my wife and my daughter. You know, we had people with the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, we had fathers of daughters write in and even fathers of sons saying, wait a second, what are we telling our sons and our daughters about a woman's value and a woman's place in society? Here we have, you know, Hillary Clinton running for the presidency, and we had Sarah Palin on the Republican ticket running for the vice presidency, and now you have so many more women in this 2012 campaign year running for various offices of leadership in our country, and yet the media continues to sexualize and objectify women as if that's our only value, to be objects for the male gaze.
You also indicate that, and when you hear these statistics, you forget how few women there are in the seats of power in this country.
Oh.
There aren't very many.
No, so here we are, 17% of Congress. We only have 6 female governors. I mean, it's pathetic. If you see the movie, you'll see more stats. But,
right.
I mean, the U.S. is currently 94th in the world in terms of women in national legislatures. We're ranked behind Rwanda, Haiti, Cuba, Afghanistan, and Iraq. I mean, Afghanistan has 25% women in their parliament. We have 17%. I mean, it's like, come on, people. We are failing in the U.S. We are failing our women. We have a gender gap. We have a wage gap. I know that you in Wisconsin are pretty familiar with the wage gap, or if you're not, your governor didn't actually addresses in a way that I think many women are happy about. But white women make 77 cents on the man's dollar, Latino women 57 cents, African American women 63 cents. So we're the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have paid family leave. You know, so what does that say about how our country values not only women, but fathers and the family in general?
We do a lot of show on politics. I want to play for our audience part of the film where media and its men in media are talking about the sexualization of Sarah Palin and the incredibly disparaging comments about Supreme Court Justice Kagan, just to give you a sample. And the film is filled with these. You could say, oh my goodness, this is, I can't believe it's 2012 and this is happening. We'll have Jennifer explain to us what this is after we hear it, but it's self-explanatory.
She's irresistibly cute, let's put it that way. In the way she presents herself, obviously she's attractive and all that.
Sarah Palin looks really hot in that hat.
She just said that she doesn't know how cars work. Oh, that's crazy. You seen a hat on her?
Both you and Sarah Palin are good-looking women. I mean, you're attractive, young, relatively young women.
Kagan, he's going to put on the U.S. Supreme Court. Isn't there such a thing about the aesthetics of the appointee? Let's put it to you this way. She's not the type of face you'd want to see on a $5 bill.
I can't believe that. It's just dumbfounding to me. And when you point it out, it's omnipresent, isn't it? Who are these people? What are they doing?
Yeah.
Nobody talks about men that way, except for John Edwards' haircut.
I know. You know, but it's everywhere. You know, I was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and the press and the media were fawning over and celebrating the Kardashian family and Lindsay Lohan, and not paying attention to really intelligent thought leaders in our country. You pick up the cover of Vanity Fair this past month, and you have, or this current month, and you have four of the, most successful TV actresses currently on TV, naked under a sheet with, diamonds on and their hair all done. And it's, you would never put four of, the male, you wouldn't put George Clooney and Brad Pitt underneath a sheet together, naked. it's constant, and it's like, come on, people, we have to wake up and really, like, be conscious of what we're doing, what we're communicating. The media is this pedagogical force of communication. It's communicating gender norms and cultural values, and the messages and the values that it's communicating are so unhealthy.
So what are we seeing? And let's look particularly at the generation that's coming up right now, those who are teenagers, those who are in middle school, girls in those age groups. How are they being damaged by this? Oh. Is there a direct correlation with eating problems, with what you're going to do with your life, et cetera?
Yes, there's a definite direct correlation with increased depression in women, lower self-esteem, lower political efficacy, which is the notion that their voice matters in politics and that their voice counts and that they can affect change. You have higher episodes of eating disorders, self-abuse, cutting, and you even have, so these are things that occur to women within women, but then you even have acts of violence against women, which the numbers have also gone up. And then you obviously have, teen pregnancy and sex, increased sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, of industrialized countries, we have the highest teen pregnancy rate. So we have a lot of problems because, in one hand, we're so puritanical and don't talk to our young kids about sex and sexuality, and yet the media is the other parent, and it's encouraging them in this path of hypersexuality and lower self-esteem, and sex is power. I mean, that's what the media is telling our kids. You know, just look at the success, as I mentioned earlier, look at the success of the fact that the Kardashian family's reality TV show is being, has another 3-year contract.
It's such a waste. It's like just a waste of time, too. It's such a waste of your life, all of those people.
It is. And it's not inspiring. I mean, I love to talk about the whole, you know, the notion of if you can see it, you can be it. Well, or if you can't see it, you can't be it. Well, what the media is communicating to our kids and our girls in particular is that they can't be leaders. They don't belong. They're not intelligent. Their value really is in their youth, their beauty, and their sexuality. And so girls are eating that up, and boys, young boys, and men increasingly think that that's a woman's value and that's her place in society. And it's increasingly hard for women to break free of that and away from that. And it's very scary.
Well, what happened, Jennifer, to a movement that was important when I was coming of age and that seemed to be making some progress, the whole women's liberation movement? What happened to all of that?
Well, we talk about that in the movie, and we get into a little of that backlash. But, you know, we didn't achieve everything that we sought out to achieve. We've made so much progress, and we owe such respect and gratitude to the women and men before us who really fought for women's equality. But we, as I mentioned earlier, women are not equal in the United States of America. There is a gender gap. There's a major gender gap. And unless we actually really tackle this and address this, we're not going to see change in the near future. And it requires more women behind the scenes in leadership positions, whether it's in politics or in media. I mean, just think about it. If you had, right now we have women as 3% of media positions of clout. If you reach a tipping point of 30-some percent, women are 51% of the population, as I like to remind people of, and we do give birth to 100% of the population. But if you even reached a tipping point in media, you would see a very different media landscape. You wouldn't see sexualized, you know, hypersexualized, pornographic images of women in the news media. You wouldn't see it. You wouldn't see them in, you wouldn't see this explosion of junk food reality TV. You wouldn't see a celebration of, you know, all of the families that have sort of, whether it's the Kardashians, the Hiltons, Lindsay Lohan, whatever, you wouldn't see some of that where, you know, a young girl sells a sex tape and all of a sudden she's a celebrity overnight with sponsorships and her own TV shows. Like, you wouldn't see that. And therefore, and as a result of that, you know, you really could see all the incredible, there'd be room in media to celebrate all the incredible women that have made changes in, that have led incredibly innovative companies and have been leaders in the political sphere. And you know, I just made me think about, you know, we have in the documentary, there's this statistic where in Nancy Pelosi's first 4 years as Speaker of the House, she was not on the cover of one national magazine.
I was amazed
John
to see her
first
right.
4 weeks as Speaker of the House, who's on the cover of 5 national magazines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of a message does that send to us about a woman's value in leadership? I mean, basically, she was scorned. She was seen as, a threat. You know, it's very, so all these things, all these nuances we get into in the documentary.
Jennifer Siebel Newsom, filmmaker, speaker, actress. Her documentary, which we've been playing clips from, is Misrepresentation. And there's a whole campaign going on as well in schools, et cetera. You can find more information about it at www.misrepresentationallonword.org. We're welcoming phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. These are some young people talking about media in the documentary Misrepresentation.
We see so much in the media that there's so much negativity towards women and their weight and how they look, and it's just a representation of the pressure we feel to conform to men's ideals. There's this concept of the perfect woman who looks this certain way, and because women may not look that way, they're scrutinized.
I remember fifth grade, I was worrying about my weight, and now I'm in ninth grade, I'm still worrying about my weight.
Me being a small person, like at my old school, I was told to like go throw up or like go eat a hamburger because people thought I was like anorexic or something, so I would like eat a lot so that people would think that I didn't have an eating disorder.
To your phone calls now, starting with Frank in Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello. Excellent topic. I'm of an age I'm beginning to use that phrase, of an age where I had expected that gender equality would sort of become general and we would acquire respectively the better traits of the other sex and the world would move on in a more equitable fashion. And it didn't happen. Women made advances, but over the intervening years from the 60s, I perceive that one response for men to the need to deal with a greater prominence of women, and that certainly has happened, is to become a boor. And it seems that that response has been really promoted by commercial interests. And I tend to think, especially liquor and beer advertising, which gives you a really gender-divided image of the world. And not only do we have this boorish behavior on the part of men, but an equivalent lad culture has been sold to women.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to confront larger issues. But money has been made, and drinking culture has become a caricature of what previously was recreation. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, always,
thank you.
Frank.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just love to remind people of our power as consumers. So if you see a really sexist ad that is demeaning, you can write in, and sometimes it's one letter or, you know, one email or one phone call to the CEO of that company, whether it's the advertising company or the company that actually manufactures the product, and use your voice and say, you know, this is disrespectful, this is demeaning, what kind of a message are you sending to our kids? And just remind them, I mean, just think about it. Every man has some woman in his life. Every man came from a woman. You know, he may not know his mother, he may not have a good relationship with his mother, but there's got to be a young person, you know, a young woman in his life, a niece, a daughter, a son's friend who he cares about and who he wants to see empowered and who he wants and hopes will realize their potential in life. And so people just start to have to start making the connections between the media's limiting portrayals of women and limiting messages about what it is to be a woman with a woman's actual ability to become a leader and fulfill her potential.
You have a daughter. Do you have two daughters, Jennifer?
I have a daughter and a son.
Great.
Our next documentary actually delves into masculinity and how we're raising our boys and
excellent.
How hyper extremes of masculinity aren't necessarily helping us as a culture.
So what are you doing as a mom with your son, who's probably very young, and your daughter?
Yeah. So my son's 10 months, but as you know, I'm basically, in some sense, trying to raise them the same. I'm trying to instill care and love and nurturing in my son, who obviously, I mean, he's 10 months, so people can laugh at me because I'm really just in the beginning of this all. But, you know, my daughter is in a ballet class. She's also, we have swim class and we play soccer and basketball and tennis outside. And so, you know, my son will do the same. I have no qualms with my son being in a dance class. I have my daughter. I'm really not into the way we so bifurcate gender. So everything that relates to a girl is pretty and pink, and everything that relates to a boy is blue. So I, you know, my daughter, I put a lot of green and brown and blue on her growing up, and she wears pants more than dresses that have to be zipped up in the back or, you know, buttoned in the back. I mean, I think in some sense, someone told me that that's like, you know, enslaving young girls at an early age by putting them in clothes they can't actually take off themselves. you know, I read her books where if there isn't a female protagonist, I pretend that the protagonist is a female. And I'll do the same with my son. I'll read him books where there are female protagonists. So he recognizes that it's normal for women to be in leadership. The problem is a lot of, historically, our books, you know, the Disney culture is not necessarily, or it's not even not necessarily, it is not healthy. The whole princess culture is not healthy for our kids, and I think parents really need to recognize that. Granted, the princess culture, psychologists say, is a phase. It's not always a phase with some girls, and so, I mean, I will avoid that as much as possible. You know, I just think encouraging more women to tell their stories and supporting more female authors and not necessarily just reading the old classics. Even the old nursery rhymes are damaging. My husband and I were singing some songs, and we were and going, oh my gosh, wait a minute, this is horrible, this is abusive, you know. So I really think we have to rethink some of the culture that we just sort of subconsciously perpetuate, whether it's songs or books, that really demean and degrade and limit women.
Your husband is also in the film and has some wonderful things to say about this whole issue. So I'm sure that with your son and daughter having you and your husband as parents, you're going to take on all these issues in
yes.
a big way, aren't you?
Thank you. Yes. No, it's so, I feel so grateful and blessed that we could have one of each to
yes.
to really, you know, try and learn and from them and also raise them in a way that values, you know, I mean, the way we cut off our boys' heads from their hearts, the way we, you know, stifle or try to stifle their emotions or, you know, that's, we've got to challenge that as a country. It's so important. I mean, forget biological differences. If we can encourage our boys to feel and care and love and express emotion and not call them sissies if they cry.
Right,
and, you
right.
know, not... make fun, you know, not say they throw like a girl, and right. really, if we can teach them to value the feminine and value girls and value women, I think we can raise a really healthy generation of future leaders, both
yeah.
male and female.
It's interesting. We just had right before you, we had an hour. Today is VE Day, and mm. we were talking with a World War II vet, you know, who was in Patton's army, and we were all crying. You know, you reach a point. There are certain events in life, or maybe a passage of time. First, time passes. You get old, you get wrinkled, you get fatter, and all this stuff seems absurd that were so much a part of your young life. You get older, you realize that these were marking events to be in war, and you can cry about it. There's something about age that makes us much more genuine, doesn't it, and equitable and all of that.
I believe so. I definitely believe so. I think, I'm making a leap here, but there's, you know, there is a fear of dying and death and aging in this country. I think the
media yes.
The media is really kind of gone down the road of plastic surgery and perfectionism mm-hmm. And just, it's so unhealthy to me, and it scares me because I get that I get the whole being camera ready. I get, you know, people value aesthetics to a certain degree, but we've just taken it too far in an extreme direction where, you know, women are spending more money on plastic surgery than on their education. And that's scary. Or on the education of someone else, or on, you know, fixing some of the world's problems. I mean, we're so self-obsessed in this country, and we've become so vain. It's just, it's really scary. It's horrific. And that's, again, that's so many of these are the reasons why we made this film and why we're making these other films. Mm.
There's another film for you. I think somebody should do a very honest film about our fear of dying. And,
yes.
you know, it'd be...
Yes.
Just do it. You can do it. You
yes,
know how to do documentaries.
That's on my list.
All right, all right. Okay. All right. Do it before you die, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Joan and Delavan. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Where can I see this documentary, Risk Representation?
Yes. So if you go to our website, misrepresentation.org, there are screenings not only across the country but around the world daily. I'm currently in Chicago. I'm headed to Denver tomorrow. And it's just the film has. I mean, we're screening in places as far away as Azerbaijan.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. So it's crazy. And you can host a screening, which is really exciting. But also, just for you can actually acquire the education curriculum, the age appropriate video modules for your kids' schools as young as kindergarten. And that's all at misrepresentation.org. You can also buy the DVD or watch the documentary on iTunes. So there are multiple ways to see the documentary right now.
Thank you, Joan. Thanks for your call. Jim in Pleasant Prairie. Hi.
Yes, good morning. Well, you've already touched a little bit on one of the principal issues of my formative years is women's liberation. So what happened? And I think a partial explanation for that, but of course the larger reality is much more complex, but I'm afraid our dumbed-down media yeah. has found sexuality and violence, two things that are very easily fit into a 30-second soundbite.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, I'd like to take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yes. You, sir, you kind of answered it yourself, but in terms of the women's liberation, I mean, I think we didn't pass the Equal Rights Amendment, and there was a conservative backlash against women in the 70s, and we really were, as a result, you know, we've come so far, but we obviously now, given the advent of, you know, reality TV and infotainment and all a result of media conglomeration in some sense, we're at a place, to your point, where the media companies are sexualizing women, objectifying women, and increasing violence to get eyeballs and attract attention. And that's really been a disservice, not only to our media, but to our general culture, and it's harming our youth.
Thank you very much, Jim, for the call. Here, a couple emails have come in. Gretchen in Oshkosh writes, we just sponsored and viewed misrepresentation in Oshkosh the same month now that we have a 13-year-old and a 14-year-old, both girls, commit suicide.
Oh, my God.
What can we do? The movie presented a million examples of the problem, but we need more solutions.
Yeah. So that's our campaign. So this, whoever you are, thank you. You need to join us online at misrepresentation.org. One of the things I recommend, and we're hosting them, we're starting to host them, are to have town halls. So a town hall would be a gathering of, you know, academics, thought leaders in business, politics, educators, youth, nonprofits, parents, the whole kit and caboodle. They haven't screened the film, for people to screen the film, but then to have a conversation about the three things in that community, the first three things that the community needs to tackle and make a pledge to tackle, to overcome these damaging messages that we're communicating to our kids about a boy's place in society or value and a woman's or girl's.
Tell me, I don't think I'm asking you anything too personal because you do talk about it in the film. But you have not escaped all of this either. You had some tragedy when you were young, and you had an eating disorder, and so many young girls have eating disorders. Can you talk a little bit about your own life, Jennifer?
Sure. So I lost my older sister when I was younger in an accident, and I blamed myself. It was my fault, but, you know, I was almost 7 years old. She was eight. And, I don't think I really got over that. I was very much, I tried to be perfect, for my parents to make up for her loss. And I really, as I say in the documentary, I tried to be two daughters instead of one.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole perfectionism thing that I think young girls, and increasingly young boys in some communities go through, I think it's just so damaging. I was a pleaser. I didn't know that I could say no to men's advances. I mean, I did to a certain extent know this was wrong, and I was scared, but despite being this successful athlete and I was on the junior national soccer team and all-state basketball and tennis, like I was a pleaser, and I was taken advantage of. I was assaulted and multiple times.
Mm.
And I went inwards, and a bunch of my high school friends had started to develop eating disorders and were really controlling what they were eating. And here I was on the junior national soccer team and playing all-state basketball at the time, and I thought I needed to change my diet like they did. And I became consumed with it, and I ended up having a back injury, and I ended up having to quit the soccer team at Stanford. But I also did it because of a bad experience with my soccer coach, but you know what? The good news is it was a horrible, horrific time in my life, and I took me a while I overcame the eating disorder. It took me a while to feel comfortable and safe with men, and I had a couple instances in Hollywood. Despite being older, I started in Hollywood when I was 28. And, but I guess to turn it on the positives, you know, and I did want to leave the industry because of bad experiences. But the wonderful thing is I met my husband. I kind of rediscovered myself, my power, my voice, most importantly. And the film actually helped me to find my voice. And I made this film so that other girls don't hopefully have to suffer and experience what I went through. And that's kind of my story. I mean, I really hope it, you know, because making it gave me a voice, and I hope it can give other women a voice and young men a voice when they're, you know, taken advantage of or abused or assaulted in any way. I think it's important that these issues be allowed to come into the forefront of public and national conversation. And I think that's what's happening right now with misrepresentation, especially, you know, at misrepresentation.org and through all of our partnerships with nonprofits that are working to empower women and girls across the country. And increasingly, and, you know, because our next documentary delves into masculinity and boys, I mean, I think we're going to have a lot more to say with men and, you know, we'll be able to engage men in a way that I think will be increasingly healthy for all of us and help us heal as a country.
Well, Jennifer, I think you've really found your voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you have.
Thank you.
Let's welcome more phone calls. We'll take them momentarily. Jennifer Siebel Newsom is our guest, filmmaker, speaker, actress, founder and CEO of Girls Club Entertainment. She is the filmmaker who did the documentary Misrepresentation, which, as you heard her say, is being seen all over the world. And you can get more information about the film and the whole curriculum that is a part of it at misrepresentation.org. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. So there you go. All kinds of ways to get a hold of us. More calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
When she raises her voice, and when a lot of women do, you know, it's as I say, it reaches a point where every husband in America has heard it one time or another.
You get a woman in the Oval Office, most powerful person in the world, what's the downside?
You mean besides the PMS and the mood swings?
From the documentary, Misrepresentation. Doesn't even need comment, does it? Art in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, Art.
Hi. Well, as many of your listeners know, that we've had a little controversy in Wisconsin about equal pay and legislation related to that and the repeal of some of that. And one of the rationales by Senator Grossman was that women essentially are not expecting as much pay and they're not as pushy at work, et cetera, don't demand a raise. And unfortunately, there's a little bit of truth to everything and a little bit of truth to that argument. But the counterpoint is that women are expected not to be pushy at work. I even have a case where an African-American woman was interviewed, and she asked how things went, and everything went fine. And then the person who was making the decision said, well, at least you're not pushy. And then she was not hired ultimately for whatever reason. We'll find out someday. Mm-hmm. So you have a stereotype that women are supposed to be not aggressive at work, and then when they don't get as much pay, we're told by our politicians that that's the reason why.
Mm. Right.
Any comment?
No, I appreciate that. I really appreciate you caring about this as well. And I think you're right. I mean, I do think we need to, raise our girls differently. Someone said, how are we to raise our girls? In some ways, I said, I think we need to raise our girls in some ways like we raise our boys, to not be afraid to be assertive and have confidence and ask for what they feel they deserve, but not be obviously afraid of rejection and let things kind of roll off their shoulders. Again, who knows? I don't quite know, because it's one of the things I'm exploring in this next documentary is how much of that is genetic and how much of that is learned behavior. But I do think we stifle a lot of our daughter's confidence and that sense of their own power and their own value by placing so much value on externalities and on their looks and on their sexuality. I think it's all connected, and we do, you know, Sheryl Sandberg has talked a lot about how women need to sit at the table and not leave before they're asked to leave, and I think a lot of what she says is correct. It's not everything, but I do believe that it's important that we women learn when it's appropriate to ask for that promotion and to ask for that mentorship and
yes.
to not
yes.
give up. I mean, I tell girls who email me, and some do, and it makes me so proud, even if it kind of stresses me out sometimes, but I'm like, if you don't hear back from me right away, email me again. And I wasn't that girl. Like, if I didn't hear from someone, I totally and sent them a letter or an email or left them a phone voicemail, I would feel in some way rejected,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I want to teach the next generation of girls to just be assertive, because boys are, and they're confident, and they don't take it personally. And so I think, I mean, again, I'm generalizing, and which is not always a good thing to do, but I think, to your point, you know, we have to be thoughtful in asking for that promotion or asking for that raise or asking for this is my value. And I think that, you know, if we can learn that and we can really learn our value, then, we'll get what we want. I mean, I think that's so much, you know, what's at stake here. So.
Thanks, Art. Here's a really interesting email from Shyla in Madison. I'd like to point out that the sexualization of women is much worse in European Asian societies. But in opposition, Jennifer, to your point of view, the result has been that women who are more open with sexual overtones in the media have more power roles than in the United States. It appears that the sexualization of women is not the center of the issue of gender inequality. It is the moralization of sexuality and sexual power. The attitude towards sexual overtones as perverse or degrading is what continues to put women at a disadvantage. The true feminine power of women is the free expression of their sexuality.
I think we have a very complex relationship with sexuality. I do firmly believe that, you know, one sexuality is a private matter. It's a beautiful thing. I don't agree with the pornification of mainstream media. I don't agree with that a woman's power is in, you know, exposing her breasts or her, or indulging in plastic surgery. I believe a woman's power is in her care and in her heart and in her compassion and in her empathy and her collaboration and her leadership that kind of creates a win-win scenario for all.
What's with this exposing of the breasts thing that's going on these days? I mean, sometimes I don't know if I'm just a prude or...
No.
It just seems as though everybody would be looking at your breast if you're showing your breast all the time. I don't know where that came from.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I mean, boob jobs, the plastic surgery has just skyrocketed. And it's just funny. I have a friend whose husband's a plastic surgeon. And she said to me, we'd lost touch, and they live in another state, and she said to me that he jacks up the prices because he finds it the oddest surgery. He just says it's so bizarre putting something into a woman's breast. Now, look, I mean, if a woman has breast cancer, I understand.
Right.
But it's this obsession, and, you know, I love to tell, come across people and with my husband being in politics, and you meet people all the time that have things done, and it's just scary. And I, you know, Jane Fonda actually said in our documentary, she was at, and I thought it was very interesting, but she talked about this sort of alien nation that we're creating where everybody kind of looks alike, and they all, it's almost like they all kind of see the same plastic surgeon. And I just think we women, it's like, what are we doing, you know, going under the knife, spending all this money, it requires all this recovery time, and what kind of a message, seriously, I mean, think about it, and this is what kind of grounds me is, and I say this to my mother who has friends who have indulged, and my mother's like, you know, I haven't, and should I, and because I definitely, there's that peer pressure thing that women, I think, feel in communities. And
oh, I'm sure.
And but part of it's, I feel like, come on, ladies, like, shouldn't we be focused on giving back or helping a sick neighbor or helping the elderly or helping to raise our grandchildren or just modeling for our kids and grandkids a better way to be a woman? I mean, we're succumbing to this whole misnomer that our value, again, is in our youth, our sexuality, and our beauty, when really isn't our value in our wisdom and our care and our intelligence, our life experience? And so, anyway, I'm kind of talking in a roundabout way here, but I think that it's a real disservice, and it frightens me because again, whether you like it or not, a young person is watching you and they're mirroring you. And so if your face doesn't move and you don't have any smile lines,
right,
and you're literally like perfect all the time, but that's not reality. You're saying to your 20 something or your teen daughter or your teen son that this is what women are supposed to look like. And so your poor teen son is going to be like, well, Mom, like, there, no one looks like that except for you or all, you know, your friends. Or, you know, same with the boob thing. Or you're saying to young girls, like, that's their value. And I just, it's so wrong.
Let's go to John in Marquette. Hi, John.
Oh, hello.
Go ahead, please.
I'm just calling. I was just curious about the comment about Walt Disney as far as being damaging for kids. I mean, I grew up with it. My kids grew up with it. And, I mean, we're all fine.
Yeah.
Just curious that what it is about Walt Disney that you think is so damaging to children.
No, thanks for asking. So basically, of Disney's all the Snow White, Cinderella, the female protagonist's main purpose in life is to find love, and she's aesthetically created in a way that's, you know, on the scale of beauty, not your average-looking woman. So, and her purpose is to find love, get married, and that's limiting because women in modern culture have more aspirations than just to find love. Not all women seek to find love. Finding love is a wonderful thing. I found love, but find love. But then, what about, you know, becoming an inventor or, writing a book and becoming a novelist or saving the world. I mean, they're just, the stories are so limiting because they don't tell our boys and girls who read them that they can be more than that. And then there's the whole, as Gina Davis says, you know, the whole fairy princess culture, which is a great job if you can get it. I mean, how many women are really princesses or become princesses? There are very few princes in the world, therefore,
right.
You know, how many of us really get to marry a prince? You know, and the lives that look, you know, the celebrity lives that look glamorous and prince and princess-like, they're not real. They're tabloid fodder. I mean, of all stories, I mean, look at the Kardashian family. That's not, none of it's real. It's all manufactured. And by the way, as someone told me recently, Kim Kardashian herself uses 140 beauty products on her face a day.
Oh, my gosh.
140. Like, how much time does that take? How much maintenance? And seriously, how much money? And are you kidding me? Like, women don't have time for that. We have so many more important things to do with our lives.
Yeah. John, thanks for the call. Andrew in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think what I wanted to address, and I've been hearing a lot of fine points, because what I'm not hearing is the devaluation of women, I think, begins in the home. I think that people are not taking the time to teach their daughters or their sons proper moral conduct and how to treat each other, you know. And why, okay, one of my main complaints, I take my daughter to school in the morning or my son, either school, and I see young girls wearing shorts so short that their buttocks are falling out the bottom of the shorts.
Right.
Or they have prints or signs in salacious places. You know, and why do they allow their daughters to go to school like this? What are they teaching their kids at home about moral values?
Right. And that's why I really encourage, thank you for bringing all that up, I really encourage families to screen the film and screen it together and have a dinner conversation around their values, but also communities. So I've had quite a few women friends who have brought other women friends to screenings because, increasingly, hopefully they'll bring their spouses and what have you. But it's really important because we're all raising our kids together in a sense because our kids are going to school together. So to your point, if girls are dressed like, you know, hookers at school, then what kind of a message, and they're quote unquote the cool girls, what is that sending? What kind of a message is that sending to your kids? And so what can we do without blaming? It's because it's not one person's fault, but it's mm-hmm. like, what can we do to raise the consciousness of modeling for each other a healthier way to dress, to your point, healthier values, self-respect, challenging all these limiting messages that the media is perpetuating and sending to our kids in spades.
Thank you, Andrew, so much for the call. Jennifer, thanks for the hour and for doing
great.
The
Thank
film.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Our guest this hour, Jennifer Siebel Newsom. She's a filmmaker, a speaker, and an actress. Her documentary is Misrepresentation. And we have, in case you missed all of this, on our Facebook page, it's misrepresentation.org. We also, because we did the World War II, today's VE Day, hour number one, we wanted to let you know that there are links, and this is very important for those of you who know World War II vets and would like to make sure they have a chance to see the fabulous memorial in Washington, in addition to the Lincoln Memorial and all those great monuments. There are links to various honor flights around the state for World War II vets that are flown to Washington to see their national memorial. So go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and those links are with you there. And what else did I want to say? Today is primary day. We have really good election coverage. If you've never heard it, why don't you listen tonight? It starts at 8 o'clock, and tomorrow we will be doing one of our hours on what happened today. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show, Brett Jaspers for on-air production here in Milwaukee.